Welcome to a special episode of Natun ja Robun Esports Podcast, this time in English, because we have a very special guest here. But of course, I have my co-anchor here with me, first of all, Mr. Roope. How are you doing?
It's good to be here. I'm feeling a little nervous about my rusty English, but...
thank you.
Obviously, yeah. Of course, feeling thank you as well, and excited to... Talk to Snoppy here today. Welcome, Snoppy.
Thank you, Robo. And hello, Jona.
Hello. How are you doing this fine evening? We're recording this in the evening time, so how are you doing this fine evening?
I mean, good. It's been a long day. First, walking my daughter to kindergarten, daycare, I guess it is. And then a long practice that we finished 1 hour ago, and then now podcast.
Okay.
So yeah, that's been the day.
Just another day in paradise.
Yep. But it's been a good day though. Good practice and a good morning. So everything is fine. All right. How about you?
All good. I'm actually on a 3-day winter holiday. Massive 3 days off from work.
Amazing.
So this is not work.
This is fun. This is fun. All right. Yeah, it's not. I don't get paid for this. So we're just doing this for.
Because wait, you're not going to pay me? Robo.
No.
You accept Pepsi Max payment?
Except his burger.
Okay.
Yeah.
20 okay. Euro gift card. Okay, we can do that.
Yeah. Fair enough. I mean, we're going to start with the important topics here first, which is the weather. We always talk about weather here. Mm. And because you're the guest, you get to tell us, how's the weather like in Copenhagen?
I mean, it was actually really annoying weather this morning. It was very windy. And apart from that, it was okay. But when you have to walk 2 kilometers back and forth with a stroller, it's nicer when it's not really windy. Mm-hmm. So, I think it's been good the rest of the day.
Yeah.
Plus three or four degrees, something like this. But it felt a lot colder because of the wind. But I guess that's nothing in Finland.
Oh, no. It's just, well, I mean... Where I live is, you know, I'm so far away from the sea, so it's not windy, but similar temperatures for sure. It's the shittiest type of winter weather, in my opinion.
It's just when it's snow, right?
Yeah.
Best is snow and sun.
Yeah.
Once every second year in Denmark.
Yeah.
I mean, I visited Stockholm earlier this week, and they had the weather that I wish we had right now, like plus 3, +4, +5, something like that, and no ice. No loska on the ground, no melt.
Well, this is what we have in Denmark. Normally.
Yeah, it's terrible. And by the way, I'm already really excited about someone new clicking onto this episode. Snoppy interview. Let's go. We've got Falcons. We got Falcons Simple. But we started off with weather talk, so I'm really happy for us doing this.
Yeah, I mean, listen, why not? We have to keep up with our traditions. Obviously, if you're not an avid listener of this podcast, you won't know, but we always talk about the weather. It just has to be done. Sometimes Robo is trying to skip the part, but then I reel him right back in to talk about the real things.
Yeah, can't forget anymore.
Yeah. Okay. Well, the mandatory weather report from Lahti as well is similar temperatures. It's we do see the sun every now and again here now, so I have taking my sunglasses out a few times, which is nice. But at this point in time, you're just done with winter and hoping for springtime to come soon. How's Vanta doing?
Yeah, similar from last week. It's all the same. I'm getting depressed talking about this. Can we move on to Counter-Strike, guys?
Yeah. I'm down. I think we have a lot to talk about here. We'll try to squeeze this into... Well, we'll see how long this will end up being, but the thought process we've had about this, we wanted to kind of, actually meant to do this earlier already, but yeah, we just didn't have the time. Kind of talk about a bit the past with Mr. Snoppy here, about his 3-year tenure at ENS, and then of course, you know, we have to touch on some current subjects as well while we have you, and then I think Robo had some thoughts about, or wanted to talk about the CS2 and how it is at this point in time.
Yeah.
Did I forget something?
No, but there might be some surprises.
Oh, yeah, you never know.
You never know.
Where the ship goes.
If we just want to get like a grand look, I don't know if we want to deep dive like what's happened like quarter to quarter or anything like that, but just like Snoppy U joining ends, it's a very unique story, right? Like a 30-year-old in-game leader who maybe wasn't seen as like this hot thing at the moment, or rather at that time. Obviously we knew how it ended up pretty well. Won a tournament, a few big tournament finals. So how would you sum up your time in ends if you had to do it like pretty like in maybe 1 or 2 minutes? How would you sum up all that time?
I mean, obviously this was where I got a lot of it was where my career kind of got a kickstart, in the sense that it had been a rough period for some time, especially when you're in the Danish scene and you have like the players kind of behind the two best teams, right? Obviously the talent is only that far in the Danish scene, and it was really hard to get further than what that talent could give you. So going international, and especially in Ents, was just a big thing where I got a lot of trust. I think at the start it was obviously different, but the more I was there, the more trust I also got from Jona and from Mika and some of the guys that was in the organization, Niklas. And they obviously tried to listen a lot to my input, especially also because one of the guys I brought in was Sphinx when I joined the team, and he obviously became a success. So the way to sum it up was probably kind of that it was a build-up, like every single change was kind of for the better, until we had one change where it was in a way out of our control, I would say. And so the first year was about rebuilding Ents, so to say, because it came from the Finnish lineup and it had been some rough times. There was some changes. And then in 2022, we had a lineup that obviously got the first bit of success, I would say. We obviously had been in a few ESL Pro League playoffs prior to that and qualified for the Stockholm Major, but we didn't do the same as we did in 2022. And then we obviously had this streak where we got to, I think, second in the world. Second or third, with Sphinx and Hades and Duha and the last guy was Madden. And then obviously Sphinx got ripped out of our hands, and then came a down period. But then in the end, the last year became our most successful when we then got Nerds. I think this was the highest of highs. So it was kind of a good build-up. Every year it got more successful. And the last year was definitely the most successful, 4 finals in a row. We finally got a tier 1 trophy, and well, I guess Jona agreed that 2023 was out of the 3 years I was there, 2023 was definitely one with the highest consistency. I think we made playoffs 7 or 8 times in a row, and 4 finals in a row. So, yeah, that was a nice way to finish.
Yeah. I mean, 23 was a great year. I mean, one of the finals even took me to a hospital. So, actually, no, a semifinal. It was the Ents phase game.
Ah, yeah,
the one that the Angel, the classic
one.
Yeah,
yeah. That was a sick game.
It was literally a sick game for sure. But yeah, like if we kind of roll back the years here a bit and think of like the ending of 2020 was a. Of course, it was like a nuclear bomb at the end. So like everything that happened, the infamous HLTV podcast that Alo went to, and everything that happened after that. I think like this period of time was also, from an Ents perspective, like a very big learning process. And of course, like considering like the Finnish team was in a very, like the position they got themselves, I don't feel like we were under control of the situation enough, because of like the way that Ents also as an organization had been kind of building up while the team started getting bigger. You know, 2018 was kind of the first year where we got a glimpse of some success, and then 2019, you know, that's the first big year. So it kind of all just imploded at the end of 2020. So we, of course, like really took that as a learning lesson, a lot of it, and wanted to have more control. But then also, I remember also thinking when we were considering like the options, I remembered like looking at names and stuff. I mean, I was thinking of Marco, you know, I knew that he was already, even though I didn't know Marco that well, I knew that it was already a bit more mature, a bit more aged, but in a good way, in a good sense, because we had had some bad experiences before, right? So to have someone a bit more, let's say, stable as a person, you know, as much as I can say that about you, Marco.
Yeah, thank you. Sometimes.
Yeah. Well, more stable, I guess, than...
Yeah, more stable.
Yeah.
Impatient, but stable, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. So I think, you know, that kind of as a baseline felt like the perfect way to go about it. And of course, like you said yourself, the more and more you guys did good stuff, it's easier to also give more trust, right, to people. And at the end of the day, it's all about always hiring the right people. Like, that's what you have to do as leaders of anything, really. Like, you're always looking to find the smarter people, smarter than you, preferably, right?
Yeah, of course.
That's, I think, what we managed to do. And then we kind of put a baseline for the whole the tenure.
But it's kind of the same when I do, obviously, I don't do the hirings, but I come with a lot of the suggestions for the hirings for the players. And that's obviously also because if I'm the captain of the team, I need the best personnel to shoot headshots. So it kind of goes like further down into me than later in the organization, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, obviously you had a lot of good players next to you, but how much are you willing to take credit for all these player successes like Spinx, Nerds, and Sun Pius, who now have been in the HLTV top 20, Spinx in the top 5 most recently in Vitality? Are you willing to take some credit for all those players and their success?
I mean, I think at the end of the day, it will always be the players that deserves the most credit. But obviously, I do think that I elevated Spinx way quicker in the scene than he would have been, because I took him under my wings and I brought him to Ents, and I kind of changed his role from an entry. He wanted to be an entry fragger, and I changed him to a lurker. And now he's obviously one of the top lurkers in the entire world, right? So I do believe I had some impact on where he ended up in his career, but at the end of the day, the player has to do the work himself. And without that work, Lothar and Spinks, he would never have become good. So I can never take the real credit. The real credit will always go to the player. But I do believe that I have helped some of them, yes.
Yeah. I mean, it's easy to say, like, I'm like, of course, it's always a multitude of things. Like, it's not just one person, one thing, or this or that. It's always like a chain reaction, a lot of things. But like, one of the things, if we think about Sun Pius as an example, he came in to the team as a player that everyone knew had a really, really effective CT set it up. But his T-sets was where he was struggling coming into Ents. And I'm sure this could be something you could elaborate on that maybe a bit. Like,
yeah, I think we worked a lot with it, me and Neto, and also with Alvaro, but he's also very... We pushed. I think we were, like, at the start, we didn't know what buttons to press, but I think we learned that along the way. About pressing him into certain things where he could improve his T-side orping, making him more selfish, less of a setupper. Like, he wanted to always set up people with flashes and smokes and all of this. He saw GM doing it and Shiro and stuff like this. But we kind of tried to push him more into a Afro device, Saivu, simple playstyle, right? And because this was where, so we told him to start watching demos of these guys. And whenever we saw him do good, like the things we wanted him to do when he did it in practice, we always remember to praise it and stuff like this. So kind of trying to push the right buttons, but then also at the same time, Sun Pius Alvaro is a insanely hard worker. He puts a lot of pride into his work and the fact that he can fix stuff. So again, the majority of the credit will always go to the player, but I do think we pushed some of the right buttons in order to activate his T-side.
And then you mentioned Eto as well, the big boss, and the IGL coach link is something we talk about more and more in the scene, in this space. So how important was it for you that Eto was there?
It was really important. I think at the start, you obviously always have to find each other. But I think when we found each other, we saw very much eye to eye on a lot of stuff. Of course, you can never agree on everything, but I think we were a good kind of match to each other. Like, I think he was very good at like being patient and like being more calm, which was a good thing for me, because at the same time, I am very impatient at times. If someone is doing the same mistakes, I can sometimes maybe address it a little bit too quickly, when you might need to have sometimes the players evolve. And at the same time, I think my impatience sometimes also helped Ito the other way around, you know, pressing things faster that we also needed to address. So I think we complemented each other good, and I think we also respected each other's mind for Sears. We saw Sears, like, you can never see it the same way, but I would say we saw it 90% the same.
Yeah, I mean, also one thing to consider is that Eto kind of learned his ropes to become a coach.
True. Yeah,
he was working with you. Like, he was a complete newbie when it comes to coaching. Like, yes, he had a small bit when he was coaching Havu at one point, but then returned back as a player. But
yeah,
we took him prior to you joining, as like, we knew that he had thoughts of moving into that position, and he seemed like the no-brainer type of person, also from a personality standpoint. But still, like, the whole coaching career for him, that's where it started for him. So considered, I think it went pretty well.
Obviously, I think he also developed a lot as a coach while we were in the team. The funny thing about the boss man is that at the start, when we made the team, actually this boss man came from the fact that I sometimes played Face It with Blame If, and he would say that they called, like, I can't remember, but they called him boss man or something. And then I made my team call me boss man. But then at the end, I said, no, but the actual boss man is Ito. He's the big boss. And that was actually how the name got. So in the end, it actually also was in that way that Ito became the big boss. Like, it was kind of the relationship we had. He was the big boss, I was the small boss. So he was the boss man in the end, because this is how I like a team is run. Like, because I also need to have a boss. It cannot only be me, because then I will just be, at the end of the day, a dictator in the game, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I always really liked the relationship. Like, of course, we still have a relationship, but like the time when you were at ENCE, like, we could talk about stuff. I felt like always openly, you know, and I, you know, whatever it may have been, you know.
It was always a direct line, also because you were honest and I was honest. I didn't actually care what it was about, or the Insta write or call you guys, you know. So I think that is also trust, right? That
yes.
I had the feeling that I could always go to you guys and say whatever I felt, even when it was something that was pretty shit.
Yeah. And it's important. It's also that creates trust, that creates a healthy environment to work in. And I kind of, that's the whole philosophy of how we run ends, like, all through and through, also on a, like, a company level too, with everyone who works here. At ENCE, you know, whatever it may be, you can always say. So it's good that we could also extend that to the team.
Yeah. For sure.
Well, then, about those Cologne and Gamers 8 finals during that good summer stretch, was there ever a chance of the team sticking together, say if you won Cologne, or was it kind of inevitable that the team sort of fell apart during this year or the end of the year?
I mean, it's a tough question, but I think it was going to be hard regardless, because I cannot really get into I don't want to get into all of the details out of respect for players and, well, business secrets or whatever. But I suspected, I was actually pretty certain that no matter what I would do, there would be at least one change at the time. And I thought that change was going to set off a chain reaction. And that was, in the end, why I chose as I did. Because if I were to stay, I would have wanted to stay with everyone. I don't know if that makes sense, but then the offer obviously came, and I felt like I had 3 good years in ENCE, and I saw it as, okay, if I'm going to potentially be losing one or more players, then I will try something else where I think I'm also going to be happy, because I always wanted to also try to obviously work with guys like Magis, Sonic, and also Lars, the sports psychologist. He was a big part of it, because as you know, I'm a bit older than other players in this business, and when you are at 33, it can be harder and harder to obviously keep up with the young guns. So I felt with this guy, I could get a lot of help in terms of improving my health. Obviously something me and Nacho have been speaking a little bit about also on a personal level, but stuff like this, but improving your mind, improving your health in order to be better off the server with your family and friends, but also in the server, optimize everything you can. So there was, I think even, okay, if we would have won both Kelowna and Gamers 8, maybe it would have been different, right? Because maybe that, those suspicions I had that we would at least lose one player would not have been there. But I think it was also probably going to be hard regardless. Yeah, that's the honest answer.
Yeah, we're in a what if world now for sure. But in that circumstance, you know, if you consider that that would have effectively put the team like at the like number one in the world, winning those titles, of course, like, you know, yeah, everyone thinking and feeling that, hey, this is a team we can win with. I'm sure there would have been a way to find terms where everyone would have been happy to you know, stick together. But that's so many ifs and buts, and
yeah,
what could have happened? That doesn't really matter at this point. Who knows?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, like with all the Saibu Simples and Shiros in the world, it was pretty remarkable that that five-man unit made all those finals and won the IEM Dallas tournament. It was actually really impressive for that team to do it. Was winning Dallas your favorite memory in ENS, or does something else spring to mind, Snoppy?
Yes, it was probably. I mean, obviously, every time you qualified for a major, I also got really happy, both because obviously it means a lot on a personal financial standpoint, but also for ENS, because I knew how important that, like, well, Jona can obviously get into it, but in order for a business to survive, it is really important to make the majors, especially when you are obviously running a good business like ENS. So those were big moments for me, because then I knew that we were going to be good, like we were good for the next long period as a team. But the biggest, of course, was when we won Dallas. It was my first tier one trophy, so it was a big relief, a chip off my shoulder, where I felt like, all right, I sometimes thought, will it ever happen? And when we won that, it was, well, I think it was also a big thing for the ENS guys, because they had also been waiting for it for a long time since I think you won. Was it a Star Series or something?
No, Blast.
A Blast. Yeah, okay, but a six team. Yeah, well, no offense. All right. I was very happy to bring that trophy to ENS and myself.
Okay, now we're talking.
You're playing the Blast circuit. Now it's not
big. Yep.
You gotta be careful,
true,
buddy.
True.
You gotta be careful, buddy. I want to, if you don't mind, Rebel, I want to kind of reel back a little, go back sure. a bit back in time. I know 2023 was a very interesting year and all that, but considering that we have a lot of, we are finished speaking podcast, you know, at 28 out of 29. Podcast episodes that had been recorded, this being the 29th, which we're doing in English. So we have a lot of Finnish listeners here. So I just kind of wanted to touch on a couple of players that along the line you had Finnish teammates, right? You had Doto, you had
Alu.
Yeah.
And Ito, yeah.
And Edu, of course, we spoke about him a bit already, but kind of your thoughts on these guys, just I guess generally speaking.
I think obviously we ended up going with other players at the time, but I would say that I actually really liked playing with both of them. I thought Alu had a lot of natural talent and a really funny guy, but I think at the time he was also still a bit affected by obviously the whole situation that had occurred 5 to 6 months earlier. And I think he maybe needed a short break at the time, but a very highly skilled orbit that, well, I think he's still proving he can actually play at a very high level. Obviously, he's not doing it in tier one, but every time I look, his numbers is really good. So obviously still really skilled and a really funny guy off the server, in my opinion. And Doto is more of the typical Finnish guy, I would say, where Elo is not so typical Finnish. I think you two can maybe address that, but this is more the way I see it, where Jonas was more just a what do you call it, like really nice but reserved guy. He wouldn't, like, he would obviously be, he would definitely say his opinion, but he would also be this, well, I guess what the Finnish, how do you even explain the Finnish stereotype, as you see, kind of where it is more, he is a bit more mellow and yeah, but I think Dota was a phenomenal clutch player. But the thing was, at the time, as you both knew, we already had Spinks and Pavel, and we had some pretty big role issues, I would say, because both Doto, Spinks and Dyha would function best in the outskirts of the map, which meant we needed a map control player. And that was in the end why we ended up parting ways with Doto, because he wouldn't thrive in the role he had with us. And we needed a guy like Madden at the time that could just run through a brick wall.
Yeah, ended up being a pretty good change. I'm always hoping that Doto makes it to another major, because as you know, the Stockholm major that you made, you didn't get your stickers into the game in that one for some reason. So I was feeling a little bit bad for him.
But I thought, yeah,
maybe one day.
That was weird.
Oh, it was. It was, to be honest, a little bit of a scam.
Yeah, wasn't it?
It's the only major that didn't have player stickers, except for top 8. And I think it was because they forgot to make them.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. That's honestly why I think.
How do we do this major again?
We talked about this, Marco, I think. Didn't we talk about that? They literally forgot about them.
I think they honestly forgot about it, and when they did them, they just put in top 8, because it makes no sense that one major out of everyone didn't have it. The rest had them.
Yeah.
Honestly, but yeah, maybe it was on purpose, but it was just really weird.
Not all of them. I never got them.
Yeah, but the early ones, obviously. But you know, all the ones from, I don't know what year, except for Stockholm had.
Maybe and 2016 was the first year now?
Yeah, maybe. But I feel a bit sorry for him in that regard, because he definitely deserved that sticker. Also because we had a very tough road into that major, if you remember. We had zero points because people were bringing, this was obviously Corona times, so people were bringing their points from like 1 year earlier, and we were obviously, you had a Finnish call back then.
Yeah.
So we had 0 points going into that tournament. So it meant we had to finish top 4 at IEM Fall. And let's just say that that was not expected of us to do that. So it was, well, that was, if I have to pick the second biggest thing we did, I would say that qualifying for that Stockholm major was probably one of the bigger things we did while I was in Ince prior, apart from maybe Dallas.
Yeah, it wasn't expected for sure. Look, I mean, I think
it was a nice surprise, right?
Yeah, no, I don't mind. I think top 6 maybe was the minimum target.
Maybe, but it was, but we had to finish very high, and we were in a group with I think Vitality,
OG,
and OG, who was OG was obviously the one with Alexi, that lineup. And then I think in the quarterfinal we got G2, which we beat, which was a big scalp for us back then.
And I remember Dodo had a big clutch in that one as well, actually.
Yeah, was that where he did the new clutch?
The one I remember was on Dust 2. He had a 1-on-1 against Nico.
That might be it. Be true. I just remember he had a new clutch at one point, but maybe it was against a different opponent.
Yeah. Okay, Rob, will you get to steer the ship now? I steered it to 2021.
All right, let's move on to Falcons. I mean, that was the big change. First of all, were there any other options, or was it pretty much Falcons?
There was obviously Ents, and then there was 3 options apart from that in total that I considered, kind of, I would say. I cannot get into what, obviously, but there was some different options. Maybe there was obviously more if I went further down, but I obviously talk about the one that was interesting to me, right? But in the end, it ended up being between Ents and Falcons. And well, I alluded to it earlier, I was pretty convinced we were going to lose at least one player because of some circumstances that happened in other teams also and so forth. And I was thinking this could be another situation like we had after we lost Spinks, where the team could go into a very long downward spiral potentially. And I was like, fuck it, I will then hit the reset button and go to a place where obviously it's going to be very hard to like, we can probably keep players, well, I would say easier. I hope it's okay to say that, Jonah. You get what I mean, right? But the point is, it's but that was kind of the thing. But the biggest thing was obviously that I was like, if we are potentially going to go through a small rebuild, then I'm going to try to work with Lars and Sonic and Magisk and some of the guys I've been wanting to, obviously, as a Dane, work with for so long, because I saw what they achieved in other teams. And as I said before, working and developing further, I obviously had an amazing coach in Saw, and I also had amazing support from the staff and everyone at Ents. But I was also at a step where I thought, okay, maybe I can also try to learn something from Sonic and also from a guy like Lars, the sports psychologist that was over in Falcons already at the time.
Yeah, for sure. And obviously the team looks pretty good right now. I mean, we can talk about the possible fifth and that situation, but you got your end score there with Magis, Sonic coaching. It seems pretty nice, but there was a point
you're
at
welcome,
least from
way.
The what's that?
I was saying, Marco, you're welcome.
Yeah, thank you.
But from the outside looking in, it didn't seem very clear like what kind of a roster is Falcons gonna get, or what are they gonna be able to get in the time restraint and all that? So were you at ever at any point worried like what is this team that I'm gonna end up with?
Well, obviously when we started practicing with Longs, MHL and Borders, so we knew it was going to be hard to get players this close to the major, obviously, because when a team is so close to the major, the sticker money for all the organizations, especially smaller ones, but also the bigger ones, to be frank, at this point, especially after Paris, right? They mean so much. So teams are very reluctant at that point to sell their players. They need to have another opportunity before they go for it, which obviously, yeah, because again, it's a massive risk to lose players so close to the major unless you have something else you can get. So it was very tough to get players. And also at the time, this was obviously before Falcons got into Blast, there was no spots in the different leagues. So it was a very big risk to go to Falcons, because when I went there, I expected it to be a rebuild for the first 6 months. Even if we would get some of the rumored players at the start, it was going to be a long, tough battle at the start in order to just get into the tournaments. Obviously, we skipped through some of that by getting both Madden and Alvaro. So we had Katowice and also Armagh and Pro League. So it obviously turned out different. But yes, of course, I was worried, but I was also accepting that it might be somewhere where we play with three talents and one of them is going to be good enough, or maybe two, and then we will bring other players post-major.
And it's not like it's your first rodeo, so...
No, like, I have obviously, for a guy like me that has worked with these types of players for my entire career, it wasn't that scary, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah, how was it for Danny, for Zonic? Like, from his perspective, of course, like in that situation, like if we think of her mentality, when the reality was that you were going to be playing with MHL and with Longs and Boros.
No, but I think everyone accepted it, and we went full all in. Went to the boot camp without PCs. We started practicing obviously, and we were very we thought this is how it is, and this is what we work with. And the three young guys was obviously trying to learn and work the best they could. But when a better opportunity is presented, we obviously had to jump on it, because getting already established players like Alvaro and Pavle into the team, but also getting some of the bigger tournaments with those signings, it was just too big an opportunity to pass up.
Yeah. Fair enough. I mean, we don't have to dwell too much on it, but what was your... I know you think highly of Lonks, but MHL, what did you think of him as a player? He doesn't get talked about too much.
Probably a bit misunderstood, because I'd heard that he was toxic, but to be honest, I didn't think he was toxic. I just think that he expected a lot from his teammates. But at the same time, I didn't think that what he expected from his teammates was out of line, because I expect the same. I just think maybe I'm older, and since I'm the captain, I can demand it. Does it make sense?
Yeah.
That you expect your teammates to work hard. You expect them to watch demos sometimes. You expect them, if they have an issue on a side, to fix it. Obviously, I will help them, but you expect all of these things. You expect people to be professional. You expect people to show up on time. Stuff like this. Yeah. That was the main things he got tilted about when people weren't doing these things. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. But it got probably treated bad because, yeah, that was how he reacted to it. And since he maybe wasn't a leader or captain in a team, it was seen as a bad thing. But I think it's a good thing if a captain reacts to these things.
Yeah, I mean, sounds totally reasonable to me.
It is reasonable. So, yeah, misunderstood is the biggest thing I can say. Obviously, a good Polish talent, and I hope he will do good wherever he ends up.
Ah, he's still young. I think
they're all very young, both, and all of them are. I think the whole issue was just that there was maybe too many young players in one team before, and then it's obviously tough because you also need some more experienced guy to nurture the talent. Like we had, I think we had a good balance, obviously, in ends where we had some older players, and then the younger players became older, and then we could take. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Unless you're a mouse.
Yeah, unless you're a mouse, but they just brought a good bunch, I guess.
Yeah, level-headed youngsters.
Yeah, obviously 2024 has started off with mixed results, I guess you could say, with Katowice probably going better than you expected, and then RMR not so much. So how are you feeling after these first couple of
Really tournaments? Bad, to be honest. I had obviously hoped for better in terms of the RMR, but it was tough because we obviously got Alvaro and Madden pretty late, and we started Prague, I think, on the 4th of January. So we started right after 3rd of January, right after Christmas. But then we had, I think, 1.5 week, something like this, going into Blast. Then we had one or two Prague days at home, then straight to Katowice, and then we overperformed at Katowice, which was a bad thing, I actually think. It's obviously really good to get a semi at Katowice for a new team. But what it meant was that we had to lose two practice because we got a delayed flight into the Armagh. We had to sleep in Munich because our flight got delayed. And well, we didn't get any practice coming into the RMR. We came straight from Katowice, and as Jona knows, you don't practice a lot when you're at tournaments because you're in a game mode, right? You're doing your DM, you're doing a theory for the matches, you're preparing the matches, you're doing a lot of things like this. It's not the same as sitting and practicing. And since we were in RMR Group A, we were just limited on practice, and we were not ready to fight like we wanted. We had some pretty big gaps in our playbook where we just didn't have time to sort it out. There were certain areas on maps we couldn't hit, and it ended up biting us in the ass. But at the same time, I think we can also say that we actually did what we could. We really tried to work as hard as we could. We sat every evening after practice and tried to fix stuff, but when you create a new team, even though we had some members that had played together before, it's still a new game, still a lot of things that you cannot do anymore simply because it is a new game. Nuke as an example, all the stuff you did on Inner in CSGO, you cannot do anymore in CS2 because the whole thing with utilities changed. You cannot use almost any of those strats anymore. So we were limited on practice, and we were obviously hoping that individual level and some of the momentum we could bring from Katowice would carry us through, but it didn't. I also think we obviously got a bit of a tough draw. We got FaZe in the... We got FaZe, and then I think we got Eternal Fire, and I think Eternal Fire is very underrated. And I also actually think we should obviously have beaten Armkull. There's no excuse there, but I don't even think they are as bad as people make them out to be. So it is what it is. It sucks, especially because it's in Copenhagen, and for me it would have been, yeah, it would have been very big to play in, potentially in front of my friends and family at a major, but there's nothing to do about it now rather than move forward and work as hard as we can.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what are you going to do? Skip Katowice or be unhappy making the semis rather? And then
the thing was like, but in a way the best, it sounds pretty stupid, but in a way the best thing for a team of like us would probably have been to do really good, like play good CS, but maybe go out like 7th to 8th in the group stage, so we could go home for 5 or 6 days, prac and get ready for the armor and fly without any 26-hour flights because of a flight stuck in Munich or whatever, all of this stuff that happened, right? It can obviously sound like bad excuses, but it is just the fact that we were very limited on practice and it was tough.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, like, from a public perspective, there's a couple of things that people are skewing expectations. I think, you know, having that core team, people are only thinking of you as synonymous to the last year's ends. Big change having two different players there, stylistically different type of players. And then, like you mentioned, the game changed. So there's a lot of that. And then of course, from like a public perspective, you know, with Falcons coming in with big guns, you know, they're always going to be there expecting a big results from day one. But yeah, it's a long grind to make everything work.
Yeah, exactly. But I also think also some of the expectations that like people obviously thought it was going to be a super team at first, right?
Yeah.
And I think that kind of still carries over, but I would say that considering what other teams are signing players for in terms of obviously what certain amount, like we still obviously only did one buyout in this team. And I would say that the term super team is maybe also a little bit, well, I would say wrongly used to a certain degree, because I think we have a very good team. But it's not like we, well, maybe now you can say it is with the stand-in we have, right? But now it's a little bit of a different situation because the stand-in we have is definitely a mega superstar.
Yeah. But at the same time, I mean, it's you can't go around the fact that the RMR was a failure. I mean, you should have gone through it. I mean, I hate to say it, but it is a fact.
Yeah, yeah, but that we 100% agree. And it's also why it was disappointing for us. As I said, like, we expected that with limited practice, we could still limp through.
Yeah.
You ended up obviously making a roster change after bombing out RMR and benching Boros. What are your thoughts on Boros as a player, his potential, and maybe why he didn't reach it yet in this Falcons iteration?
I don't want to go too much into detail because obviously I think Boros tried his best, and I'm not going to go into much. I think it's too new and too private right now that I'm just going to, maybe I can talk about it on a new podcast in a year, but for now I just want to keep that one kind of more private. I obviously think he did really good in a lot of the matches at Katowice, and he has a really high talent. So I would say his future is in his own hands because he has a very big gift in terms of especially his aim. Yeah, I think that is kind of where I want to go with that.
Okay. Should we talk simple?
Yeah, who doesn't want to talk about simple?
Yeah.
I opened Twitter and I was like, oh, X, and I was like, what's going on here?
I thought it was fake.
Yeah, I was sure someone was just memeing, but
no, like,
it turned out to be true.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he came in, like, it was very sudden. I didn't know much about it until very shortly prior to it. I think it was a deal that was struck very late with a loan. But obviously, what can you say about him? He's the goat of CSGO for a reason, right? When you play with him, obviously he hadn't played a lot of CS2, but you can already see now. I think we had some practice days, and let's just say that it gets crazier and crazier. Like, some of the stuff he does gets more crazy by the day. So I think that's just like everyone else have seen for the last almost, 10 years with him. He is a very, very talented player. Let's just say that.
Yeah. How has it, of course, he had the tenure with the International Navi for a bit, but then, majority of his career, he has been playing with Russian-speaking teams and in a certain philosophy, I guess. Jumping into something like what you guys are doing, how quickly is he adapting to the way that you guys are playing?
He's naturally gifted, so he's really fast at picking up stuff. I think also he's been playing in international teams prior to Navi, Navi. Yeah, he's been grinding FPL all the time, so it's nothing new to him to sit and speak English, and it's nothing new to him to take charge. And obviously, I think it is fair to say that we need a star player. We had in Ends with first we had Spinks and then we got Nerds. That is what we need. And I think it's fair to say that he is definitely doing the job so far from where I'm standing, and more than that also. So so he doesn't have an issue.
I need you to tell me a trade secret. How much double up are we going to be seeing from Falcons?
That I cannot obviously get into. But it's actually very hard to get a double op in CS2, I can tell you that much.
One op is already pretty hard.
Yes, it can be hard to just get a lot of op. Now we had to get them two or what?
Well,
maybe if there is a free op on the ground, we can take it. But let's see.
So you've been tracking with Simple a little bit. We have seen his rifle before. Obviously, he is one of these players who just doesn't just use the AWP. He's very proficient.
I think it doesn't matter. There's certain players like Saibu and Simple where just give them a weapon and they're going to be fine.
Yeah, I mean, that's two players out of the millions in the world, but yeah.
Yeah, but these two, I'm pretty certain a guy like Dong already from seeing him, I think you could also give him an AWP and that would probably work fine. There's just certain players that have so much natural talent for the game that it doesn't really matter what weapon they have, they're going to shoot people.
Yeah, it's sort of unfair if you ask me.
It is also... Some of the stuff, it is really crazy to sit and watch because I'm like, if I could just do that, my life would be very easy in CS.
Yeah, you just hope to die each round in practice so you can watch him play.
Yeah. It is, when you play with guys like Simple and Saibu and stuff like this, it is probably also the guys you want to spec a little bit more when you're dead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Was it the moment
watch a little bit of a Frag movie?
Was that the moment where you're like, okay, now I realize why Spinks wanted to go to Zybo?
No, I definitely understood that because obviously, when you get the chance to play with some of these players, it's very hard to say no just because of the abilities that they have will lead to wins.
Yeah.
They just do stuff that they win your rounds you're not supposed to be winning, and they win them a lot.
Exactly.
There is so many games where I've seen Navi or Vitality where they should have lost 16-13, but they win 16-12 because of these two guys just doing stuff that they're not supposed to do.
Yeah, for sure. It's going to be real, real exciting and real interesting to see how this experiment goes and if we're going to see more of Simple in Falcons or... I don't know.
Obviously, it's just a loan. But we go in and we will obviously try to do our best in Blast.
How do you like your Blast group? You have a Spirit in your bracket.
Yeah, it's tough because at the end of the day, I would say that we got a decent bracket, but then we also got the hard bracket because of Spirit. because I would say that we got probably some of the first matches. Well, I'm not going to say anything because we can lose any match at this point. But but the one team you wanted to avoid was Spirit, right? But I mean, we saw that Spirit is also mortal at Dharma. They lost to Maus and they played close against they played close against Astralis. They played close against Heroic. So it's not like Spirit cannot be beat. Let's be real.
Yeah, and just get Vertigo as the first map.
Yeah. Yep.
Put him in a cage.
Well, yeah, but I think in general that you also saw Katowice. They played phenomenal, but I also think that they obviously got a ton of good starts, and I think that is not going to last forever. Yeah. Or maybe it is if you keep shooting them in the face, but it shouldn't last forever.
Have you looked at a lot of Donk demos? Obviously, there's a lot of content around him, and how does he get away with it? The crowd.
Yeah, of course. I think every pro player have looked at him, because when someone comes out of the blue and just perform, well, not out of the blue, because I think I maybe even spoke to you, Jona, about it. The fact that 1 year ago in Spirit Academy, this Donk guy was just destroying me in practice.
Yeah, I remember.
So it's not new, maybe to the viewers, but it's not new to pro players. Like, at least for a year, we knew. Yeah, but tier one players, I think, at least
I know, but
the one that paid attention, 1 year ago, you kind of got the feeling in practice that this kid is special, because he really did some headshots on you. That was crazy. So yeah, I think most pro players have looked, what is it that he does right? And I think a lot of what he does right is the way he peaks angle. Like, he's what I noticed, and as for old guy like me, you know, sometimes I stand chill and I chill a little bit on my spot, hold an angle, right? This guy is not holding angles, ever. He is full swinging, jiggling, jiggling, swinging, swinging, jiggling. And I think this is obviously something that, when you see it, you have to kind of, okay, is this actually what works in this game? And it's something that you have to implement into your own game, that you are not standing so much still, that you're abusing a little bit more of the Pika's advantage. And he's also really good with his movement, doing these small crouches and stuff like this while shooting. And I think it's a lot of the small details, because at times it looked like people cannot hit him. And that is obviously both because people can't hit him, but it's also a lot of because of the way he moves.
Has anyone checked? Is he using one of those keyboards that has
wooding or whatever? No. I think he's not using one of these new ones that is, what do you call it? Like, trigger point, whatever. You mean, right?
Yeah, I think they're just analog switches, basically, so that you can push a button like...
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
At least when I looked, it looked like a default Logitech keyboard.
Okay.
Those are the best. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, well...
Well, I'm still on full Logitech. I used to have nothing, but then I joined in. It actually, to be fair, took some time with some of the things, but let's just keep it at that.
Yeah, there may have been some logistical issues every now and again, but, you know, those things happen. Those things happen. For some they happen more frequently than others.
A little bit of time waiting for... No, fuck it. We will just say that.
I can say one thing, because it was actually pretty funny. Everyone else that lived within the borders of the European Union typically got all of their stuff timely, no problems. But if it's Marco's address, it goes to shit. So I think it's your address that is actually somehow...
I fucking live in Copenhagen.
I don't know. There's something about that address. You need to move.
Yep. Okay. Oh, man. This fucking keyboard.
Oh, well. Should happen.
Yeah, well, I eventually got a few. I got double the amount of keyboards in the end, because I think they got so tired of me spamming them. Where is my keyboard?
I think my best... let's not go in there. Something funny, but let's leave it at that and move swiftly forward. Rob.
Yes, I guess we're now in the general topics section, so not if you have any wide array of topics, here's the chance for that. But I have something. I have a couple of snappy quotes here, and that'll steer us to maybe like CS2 discussion where it's at on MR12. So here are a couple of snappy quotes. CS2 is really bad. It's our job to accept that. That's the first one. And the second one is, MR12 is a horrible tactical change and it dumbs down Counter-Strike. Do you still agree with these statements, Snappy?
Yes, especially the last one. The first one, I think Counter-Strike 2 has gotten a lot better, actually. I feel like the updates they're bringing, the FPS has gone up, and they have optimized the game better. A lot of bugs are already gone. It feels, maybe it's because I haven't played CSGO for too long, but it feels a lot better. Yeah. Obviously, you still have a little bit too much Pika's advantage, I would say. There's still small things that need to probably be addressed. Small bugs that can be abused. Maybe it's features, but I think some of them is literally bugs. But I think Valve have done a really good job actually fixing a lot of stuff. But the economy part, I 100% stand by. Because when you're playing MR12 with this economy, people can just actually prepare the entire game plan before the game starts. You don't need to adapt in the middle of the game almost. Or maybe you need to do it by round 10 or something. But then the half is already over when you kind of get the feeling of what the enemy... Like, there is not so many mind games anymore, because a lot of teams will just have the pistol down, then the anti-eco or the force down, and then they will have the first two weapon rounds or something. And by then, it's already, what, 7-2 score or whatever the game, like 5-4, whatever. However the game evolves, right? Because of the economy in CS, there is a lot of half buys and ecos also. So I definitely stand by it that I think if we are going to be playing MR12, you definitely need to address the economy in order to get more buy rounds.
Yeah, I completely agree. Also, like, I like the fact that MR12 games are quicker. It's good from
yes, but that could have been achieved in different ways.
Yes, sure. But like, the best peeve I have with it is like, if you have a strong start, the entire half can be easily over, and it's super hard to grind your way back. And also from like tinier tactical level, also like you don't see like whether in MR15 you could see like teams like you said adapting a bit more, and it became more about the match of wits, and you could see like teams trying these different things and different approaches. But now since there are less rounds to be playing with, you don't really have that opportunity.
Yes, exactly. I just think that if they are gonna need to, like, they seriously need to address the economy. If they're gonna keep MR12, my suggestion back in the day was still that you could achieve the same by instead of having 4 timeouts, have 2 or 3 each team. I don't think you need 4 necessarily. And then I also said that the freeze time, you don't need 20 seconds. You can put 15 seconds. It will also put more pressure on the in-game leaders and the players in order to facilitate a plan quicker. You could like just change the round time again to 1:45. As you know, Jona, we played with 1:45 for, 15 years, and there was no problems.
Why did
like nobody... I don't know. And they also made smokes last for longer. Now they last for 20 seconds. First they lasted for 15. Then they made them 17. Now they're 20 and a half, right? So it's Valve that had made the games longer. And also the tournaments with ad breaks and all of this stuff. So the games weren't this long before. It was the tournament operators and Valve that made the games longer. So I was just in for reverting all of these changes and adjustments that they made. But since they haven't done that, and we now do play MR12, I do think that the time spent is way better. And the way to go now has to be that you need to address the economy so we can get more full buy rounds against each other to determine who is the better team instead of who won the few lucky key rounds.
So would you just raise the loss bonus, or would you do it?
I mean, there's a lot of different ways you can do it. Obviously, you can incentivize retakes, right? You can make it so that you get, just like you plant the bomb, you can give money to teams for defusing the bomb, like an overall team bonus. You could, in general, instead of having 1,400 money bonus, you could just fully charge it up to 2,400 or whatever, just so you never see these double ecos. And you get right out of the gate with a lot of I really think you need to pump up the economy if you're going to be playing MR12. And I don't think just getting it to 1900 money bonus might solve it, because at the end of the day, if you put 1900 plus 2400, that's 4300, right? And 4300 isn't going to get you a lot when you're CT. So you're still going to have to risk a lot with this buy, because you can get abused in so many ways, and some players will still have to get MP9s because maybe you need some utility for certain areas of the map. And with the new update they just made, I can already tell you they just introduced some new spawns that will make some of the maps crazy. I don't know if they're going to stick to them, but this obviously happened yesterday, late evening, that let's just say there's some maps where you can rush certain areas with the CTs not being able to do anything about it.
Interesting. Yeah.
Oh, well, they can, but then they have to burn all of their utility ASAP.
Yeah. I don't know. What if they did have like a retake bonus money for the CTs? Like,
no, but I think it could be good then, like, because obviously that would maybe be like, maybe that could make certain teams like be a little bit more okay. We only have a 25% chance of winning this round, but you know, if we can get this extra money, it will change the entire half and they might go for it. It will maybe lead to a little bit more ugly Counter-Strike, but at the end of the day, it is also a little bit ugly at the moment because of these force buy wars that you are kind of, you have to kind of go into full force by war in this game because it's MR12 and the economy is so important. And if you lose the economy war, you're really in a bad place in MR12.
And it's also a new game, so even like that's a big factor in making the game a bit ugly every now and again from a CS purist.
Yeah,
I do like the idea of incentivizing retakes more because in general, for the viewer, that retakes are probably, or like successful retakes are one of the most exciting things to watch in a Counter-Strike game. I feel like we need to make like fireworks go off anytime a successful retake happens. Like,
but there's a million ways you can address it. There's not necessarily only one right solution to it, but I can at least say that the solution there is right now, I 100% agree with the statement that I made that it's not the best one. There's better solutions out there in terms of adjusting the economy. But as I also said, it's my job to also accept it as a professional player. And I am actually having a lot of fun playing CS2 now because the game itself have gotten a lot better than it were. And it seems like it keeps getting better and better with each small update.
Yeah, most definitely. It's getting a lot better also for a more now casual player. Not maybe for casual player, but if I'm talking about myself, you know, it's the game, how it runs, how it feels to play is more and more naturally feels like Counter-Strike while having these new nuances and elements that make it also fun to learn things all the time. One of the things that has kept me invested in Counter-Strike all these years is the fact that you're never complete with the game. You always learn it. I feel like I've learned Counter-Strike 100 times at this point in my life, like it's a complete new game, basically.
I guess you learn it until you unlearn it.
Yeah.
Because when you get older.
Well, I mean, yeah. Also, even I'm at a young age of 38. I still feel like I keep learning in some ways.
Course. But it was Sonic who told this to me that because obviously when I play, I give info while I play, right? Like I communicate while I'm shooting and stuff like this. And he said, Marco, I also used to do this and I thought I would never lose it. But now when I play Face It, it's really hard for me suddenly, even though it came so natural.
I feel like I can still do it, but maybe he hasn't played as much over the years.
No, I don't know, but he obviously still plays, but he just said that it was weird because he thought back then that how can people not communicate while they're playing, like, and I'm not talking about like just saying one, but like you're shooting a guy and while you're shooting him, you're saying stuff, right?
Hey, shout out to most of my teammates on when I play with them.
Yeah, but he just said that it's annoying him that you kind of suddenly these things was just harder than it used to be.
Yeah.
But I guess it is just when you play the game every day for 6-7 hours, there's just certain things that becomes habit.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. I've got one more regarding like the in-game stuff, very nitty gritty. And we have a great CS mind here. So Snoppy, are you willing to entertain my dumb idea? I have a solution. I have a solution for CT side starts. Okay, so
no objections.
Here we go.
So far, no objections.
Okay, so you always play very, very aggressive on CT side pistols because you never want to let the T's plant. So that basically makes it impossible for the second round bulky Galil with maybe one AK Tech Nines, all the utility when the T's lose the pistol and force up with the bomb money. So have I solved the start to CT sides with this strat?
I think it's going to be a little bit tough, don't you? Because where are you going to play aggressive when they can go in three different areas?
Yeah, that's one of the issues, Nuppy, but on Inferno, because, I think this is a great idea.
Yeah, but you see, the issue would probably be that, okay, we are playing Mirage here, okay?
Okay, let's play Mirage.
Okay, how are you going to prevent them from planting on both A and B? If you give me that solution, I will do it next pistol round.
Okay, so I guess you push B apps with two, and... Yeah, I mean...
What happens when there's five Glocks in B apps and your two guys just get traded two for two?
I mean, it sounds like a standard pistol round, 3v3 retake.
It sounds like a bomb planted on B after this.
Oh, that's true. Okay, I tried.
I think the way, obviously, I definitely agree that you want to avoid the T's from planting if possible, but the way to avoid it is probably more by just fucking gambling and stacking one side, hoping you shoot all of them before they get the bomb down.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, maybe there's certain maps where you can do this other thing, but I don't even know which one.
I think it's only good for Inferno, though.
Yeah, maybe, but we don't play that, so... Thank you.
Oh, yeah. I wanted to ask you about the right now.
Yeah.
How are you liking it? Some people are saying it's the worst map pool we've ever had. A lot of people don't like Vertigo. Overpass is out of fashion. A lot of people are critiquing Inferno.
But I definitely agree that where is the train? I always loved train. Really liked the fact that it was really CT-sided and you had to work hard for the T-rounds. If you got six T-rounds, you were super happy because it was such a CT-sided map. And I like maps where you have to work hard for the T-rounds. I prefer those maps because I think that challenges the teams to be smart and creative rather than having maps where, like on Anubis, you can just play slow and you're going to be gifted T rounds left, right, and center.
It feels weird.
And I don't like that. I think it should be that you work super hard for those T rounds because. Yeah, I generally prefer CT-sided maps. So where is Train? I also actually think Couple was a good map that got a bad rep because it was a shit map until they changed the platform on B. People always said that there's no map control to be taken, but I always found that extremely stupid to say because have you seen A? Like, how can people actually in their right mind say that you didn't need to take a lot of map control towards A on Cobblestone?
Yeah.
I don't understand that. So those two maps, obviously, I think also, even though I was not the biggest fan of it personally, I also think a map like Cache was a good map. I think there's loads of map that could come back in and replace some of the more stale maps. Like some of the new maps obviously need maybe some tweaks. And then there's obviously also some of the older maps like Inferno and Overpass that could definitely need an overhaul. I still think Mirage is such a classic and a good map that now I just spoke a lot about it being you want a CT-sided map. Mirage is maybe not the most CT-sided map, but it can be if you're good at it. And I think there's a reason why it is the by far most played map. It is just a fun and very well designed map. You can hit B, you can hit A, you can hit middle, you can play slow, you can fake, you can do. It is just a good Counter-Strike map. Both for tactical CS to a certain degree, but also for Poggy CS.
It's the map I always insta-veto.
Yeah, because everyone else is so good at it in Face It.
Exactly. It's a dumb map to go to in Face It if you want to win games.
Yeah,
just sure. Because there's 15, 16 year olds who played
exactly
24/7, they know every single.
Listen, game. I just played with Borders and he had 10,000 Face It games and 8,000 was on Mirage. I mean, I think that tells you why you want to veto it in Face It, but yeah. It is just a very, very played map.
Yeah, that's a free tip to anyone listening who's a Face It grinder. Just ban Mirage. Just don't do it. don't do it. Especially in CSGO when there was one-way smokes. Horrible map to play on the game. I hated it. Like, really, really bad. But yeah, yep. Completely agree on the train one. We really need train. And what is your opinion, Mark, actually? I've been throwing this idea. Why don't we just have the map pool changed for each season? So and after the player break, change a map, for example, just to keep.
Yeah, you can do it, but definitely not more than one.
Yeah,
I saw someone suggesting you should make a double change, and I think that is madness because that will just lead to lower level Counter-Strike. Because you need time to get better on a map. Like sometimes the meta evolves over years on a certain map. So I think it would be bad, but I think having a yearly change in the map would be good. And then it shouldn't necessarily be the oldest map. It should just be the map that is, like, obviously it's hard to be completely objective about it, but try to figure out which maps is maybe not the most popular or which maps is maybe not working as good as intended. Take it out for a year or two and then rework it and then put it back. And then maybe you could have 9 or 10 different maps that goes in rotation when where you have 7 of them that is played. But we maybe don't need to make new maps necessarily. Maybe it's more about like adjusting the maps that you have a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, sometimes the new one could come in, but I don't think the newest maps that they have made have been the most successful, to be honest.
Yeah.
I mean, we were good at them, and then so for us it was successful, but
yeah,
that doesn't just because we were good at it doesn't make it a great map.
Yeah, but think of how many iterations of Ancient, for example, we've gone through, like, even like during the time you were at Ants, like, the map.
Yeah, there was a lot of different... yeah, I definitely think it's better now. There was a point where it was...
Yeah.
A little bit too crazy because the CTs could just take all of the control with utility and the Ts just had to wait 50 seconds every round.
Yeah, now it's the other way around.
Yeah, now the Ts can just go full crazy, it's true.
Yeah, I saw Brolin's Molly to cave. And I was like, I've never
Clay was that. Not enjoying that.
Yeah, exactly. That's like, okay, that's my position ruined. Thank you very much. What am I supposed to do now?
Yep.
So, yeah, but for sure. Robo, you still have something you want to talk about? I had one thing in my mind.
Okay, go for it.
I wanted to kind of have a quick deep dive into, like, IGLing is a fascinating topic. You know, I was forced to do it. I think it's very common. How was it for you, by the way? Did you end up as an IGL by choice, or did you cut?
No, I was forced to do it. No, I wasn't forced to do it. I was asked to do it.
Yeah.
And then I kind of just picked up the role and accepted it. I guess for the first year or two, sometimes you kind of like had the thought of, because I felt like I got better at CSGO at the time. When I was coming back, I wasn't the greatest individually, but over the first 2 years I came back, my individual level actually got higher, and I actually had some decent numbers for quite a period while in-game leading, and I did think about going back, but then I just stayed in the role, and my numbers decreased again, and now I'm still an in-game leader. So I think I accepted it after a year or two, but it was... I think most in-game leaders, there's not a lot of in-game leaders that just start out doing it. Most in-game leaders, especially a lot of the good in-game leaders today, didn't start out as in-game leaders. I didn't start out. Kerrigan didn't start out. Apex didn't start out. Glaive didn't start out as an in-game leader.
Yeah.
Maybe Glaive did it very early, but you get the point that it's very rare that in-game leaders are starting out as in-game leaders.
Yeah, I mean... It wasn't the case for me either.
No. Obviously, like some do. Maybe this Shui guy from Mouse, which is obviously big talent, did it. But I also heard this Kyuxan guy, for example, from Heroic, that was in Apex before. He also said it was the team who wanted him to do it at the time. So I think it is very natural that a lot of the time the teams just, okay, we don't have an in-game leader. And then they look at the team, who could actually in-game lead here? Hey, mate, can you try? And then that's how you get into it, a lot of the time at least.
Can you put yourself in the shoes of a younger Marco who was starting his IGLing phase of his career, and kind of like, what was your thought process, or how did you approach the game? Or did you start instantly like doing things in a certain way, or did you start learning?
I was obviously not so young because I obviously went to school and I retired, I went to school, I worked in finance, and I was obviously gone from CS. But then when I came back, I think, what was I, 25, 26 maybe, something like this. But I would say from when I started in-game leading until now, I think one of the biggest differences is that back then I would be very... very strict and a lot out of spawn, because that was how I like, we would stick to the root, like to the protocols and all of this, because that was a way of keeping control.
But
I don't know if you can remember, but when you start, you want to keep control because you're so new to it. So it's very hard for you to, when the round actually goes crazy.
Yeah.
So it's easier when the round is in a box. So I think that's how I started out as an in-game leader, and it was way harder back then to be more off the books, if it makes sense.
For like, of course, I was doing this like in a very different version and different world of Counter-Strike. But for me, when I was in game leading, I was thought like my approach to it had to depend on the type of players that I had.
And that also, of course.
I felt also in, especially in the earlier days, that we had to make a lot of the calls off of spawn because people were just not smart enough to
especially adapt. Especially when you have players that are not so experienced, you need to do it. When you have younger players that doesn't have a lot of input in the round, because I cannot sit and say, let's say we are playing overpass and I say, okay, let's go B. Maybe I can sit and micro one guy, you need to do this smoke and flash for us here. But the other two or three guys that are going to B, they also need to offer what they can do. Like, but if you're playing with a lot of young, inexperienced better players, if they are never going to say what they're going to do, you need to just make a proto. Okay, so when we go B, we do it in this or this way. And we always just do it in this or this way, because if not, we're just going to go in without any utility.
Yeah.
So I agree with you. The personal matters a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And also, I remember like even we had like a bunch of different defaults we would run, but then I would always in spawn offer that if X happens, we do this or that.
It's something. It's something that I have tried, like, I don't even still know what is the right approach, because in some teams I would say, like, all right, let's do this default into this B.
Yeah.
But in certain other teams, I would just say, let's do this default and then see how it evolves. Mm-hmm. And I think now it's maybe a mix. Sometimes I make the end round call at the end, but what people need to understand it, just because you say, let's do this default into this B round, it doesn't mean you have to end in that B round. Like, let's say you then default and you get two kills on A, you can make a different call.
Yeah. But it gives certainty to the players.
Yeah.
Especially there are types of players who need that certainty to kind of do their thing so that they have an end goal in mind already.
Or also not to overextend in the round, because if there is no end goal, a lot of players see it as a free pass to just go and peek.
Yeah, or throw their utility, you know, just randomly.
Yeah, or lock themselves. I remember on those two a lot of the time, if you didn't say it, okay, let's go A, just rotate from tunnels, and then your B guy have locked himself into the left corner so he cannot move because he says, I think there's orb on B. Now he's just there for the entire round.
But this is actually very kind of comforting to hear that certain things have not changed, even though I'm almost...
No, I think the better players you play with, the less it happens, the more input you get.
Yeah.
The more experienced and the more skilled players you have, the more input you get.
Yeah.
Good input, because there's also bad input.
I kind of like this idea of talking to a younger Snoppy. And Snoppy, what would you say to a younger in-game leader Snoppy? Maybe some lessons that could have been learned a bit quicker.
Go international. You're stuck in the Danish scene.
Yeah, don't get eaten alive. That's
no, because there's no way to climb the ladder. Because the point is that I was always, maybe I can get into North, or maybe I can, you know, but it was not possible, because you have to realize the best players was in Astralis, the second best players was in North, and then the third best players was in Heroic. You know what I mean? So even though I thought I was better, I was never going to climb that ladder, because you're still five players in a team. So the best suggestion I could have given to a younger Snobby was just fucking leave the Danish scene.
Fair enough. Okay, last one for me. I think considering you are easily can be called a veteran IGL at this point, you've seen a lot of things, you've been successful, but you've also seen the bad side. Where does a veteran IGL like yourself go for inspiration? How do you make sure that you are always, you know, kind of thinking ahead enough?
I try to learn a lot from young players. I think the moment you stop being curious and stop learning from the young players is the time when you are probably done. Because as I said, now I looked a lot at Donk, because obviously he must be doing something right. I don't care that he's 17, he's doing something right, right? And it was the same with Sphinx, for example. One thing I learned from him was losing. because he was obviously 19 at the time, and I remember we went out of the major, and I was like, 5 minutes after we lost, 5 minutes after we went out of the tournament, he was just smiling and joking, and I was like, how the hell can you smile and joke? We just went out of the tournament. And then he was like, yes, but Marco, I still have my family, I still have my friends, like, it's okay, Marco, it's just a tournament. And that actually helped me a lot, because it didn't mean he wasn't disappointed, because a guy like Spinks would instantly go home, reset, work hard, and improve in the game, right? So he wouldn't spend a week being sad and demotivated and all of this stuff. And it's something that was actually a big learning for me, because I would be very hard on myself after every tournament loss. It would be very tough for me. Because I knew, especially back with the Heroic lineup, where we weren't in all of the Tier 1 tournaments, so when you had a big chance, you really had to grab it, or you wouldn't be in the next one. And if we then would go out, I would feel bad for weeks sometimes. But I kind of got that mentality that I'm able to reset faster, because there is other things in life that are important. And if you make CS too important, it can also become tough. It doesn't mean that it is not fucking important, because I'm working my ass off every day to achieve the goals that I have. But if you get stuck in the mindset of being sad for too long when you go out of the tournament, you won't improve for the next tournament. So there is learning to be made both outside the server and inside the server from a lot of young players, I would say, just like they can learn from the older players.
Yeah, hitting nail in the head there. And also having perspective in life. I think we spoke about this with you, being a parent. That there was some discussion on the public forums for, I can't remember who it was about, some players that are parents, how that would be, I think maybe it was about three. But anyway, it doesn't matter who it was about. That how having a child could be somehow a negative thing for a player. And I couldn't have been more pissed off about that opinion.
Yeah, but for me, it's a superpower. Because I can tell you, when I'm at home, all of this, like my day-to-day life, like when you're a parent, as you know, and especially when you have smaller kids, you don't sleep as much. And like all of these things, right? It's obviously way rougher because you go up a little bit earlier, you have long practice dates, then you're a little bit together with the family in the evening and the kids and whatever. And then when they go to bed, you go and work again, right? That's it, yeah. To be honest, because I work to achieve my dreams. So I work really hard. But then I can tell you, when I go to tournaments, it's like a fucking vacation, because every player is like, I'm burned out. I'm not burned out after a tournament, because I get to sleep, I get to play, I get to enjoy. Like, what do you mean? It's not tough. It's super easy suddenly.
Yeah.
Like, that doesn't mean, like, I really enjoy and I cherish the time I have with my family. But my point being is that when you are at a tournament, you suddenly have so much free time to be 100% fresh and also work really hard at the same time and just enjoy Counter-Strike while you're there. Also, because when you're there, you need to maximize everything, because if you don't do that, then it's not worth it. And you are not doing what you're supposed to do to your family at home. Because when I am traveling so much, when I'm at tournaments, in order to be able to look myself in the eye, I need to give everything while I'm out of the house.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, like, when you're more, already an older player, you know that, you know, every chance you get, also you have to put in 110%. Like, as an example, like Kerrigan's reaction when they lost the final in Katowice, when he was crying, you know, that was genuine, because of how much he cares about it and how much he puts into it.
And
he knows,
yes, and you need that. You need that hunger You need that hunger, because I think if you don't have that motivation anymore, I think it's going to be really tough to continue, because the level is so high.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. No, but it's anything, really. If you get jaded about it, then, you know, it's time to call it and just find something else to spend your time on instead.
Yes.
I love this. This is actually an important topic.
Yeah.
But yeah, I also think that when you have kids, you also, and the family at home, you also try to really enjoy that time when you're with them, and you get, like, you can kind of use it a little bit as a free space off CS sometimes, to just kind of try to be present with them, even though sometimes when you are working a lot, it obviously you can still sometimes be stuck in work in your head, but you also owe it to your family and your kids to be 100% present when you are with them, and kind of leave with work. And sometimes you also need to leave work for some hours or some for a few days sometimes, if you have a break or whatever, and just be present with your family so you don't only get stuck in work, because that can also be something that, in my opinion, leads to bad performance. And you also need to sometimes breathe and enjoy a little bit of stuff outside of Counter-Strike.
And just be Marco.
Yeah.
And that's not be.
Yep, that's, exactly.
That's fair enough.
Yeah, so I'm... beautiful sentiments here at the end. I think we're at the end here. So, Nato, do you have anything else, or we're going
to
close this?
I think that's a pretty cool note to actually end this one on, to be honest with you. Some reality check for, I don't know, the younger maybe that, you know.
But I also think there's enough pro players that have now proven that having a kid is not, you know, the end of the world.
No.
I think you have Electronic Hobbit and Honda, I would say, pretty good players still, and they have achieved a lot while having kids.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was just going through some pictures. So I sent you the picture, I think,
yesterday. Yeah, from the office with my daughter. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, she's already a veteran of the game.
So at the end, as we say in Finnish, the word is free. So anything you want to let the people know out there?
No, thanks for listening, and kiitos.
Kiitos.
Kiitos.